Okay, Martin's had to disappear, I'm afraid, so you're stuck with me for the last bit. Barbara, which team goes first?
You have to guide me.
Okay, so we should ask we'll start with the boardroom.
Okay, boardroom first. Who's that?
Who's feeding back from the boardroom session?
Are they back?
Arjuna.
Yes, thanks.
It's too late in the day for that trick question.
The discussion, the feedback that we got predominantly was cohesive. We had feedback regarding how this would, or how this particular approach would benefit, or what would be the effects of this. And I think what most of the respondents said was that as long as the disclosures replicate the core business activities of the business or the operations of the entity, I think that would be a good step forward, and it would be worth the cost of doing so. However, there were concerns regarding this approach. The main concern would be, is it feasible? Should we have to go back and forth between existing standards, and should the effort, or could the effort, be worthwhile? So those were the main views that we got. And other than that, on the plus side, already the management commentary and discussions with regard to the management is aligned with the core business activities like operating, financing, and investing within its management commentary. So if the disclosures were aligned particularly in this way, in this particular manner, that would enable the entity to provide the information for the users in a more coherent manner. And there could be opportunities for cross-referencing. Of course, there were concerns about cross-referencing between the management commentary and the financial statements, but overall, this would make the information more aligned with each other. Other than that, the other concern which came up was, as an unintended effect, would this prepare us to restructure their primary financial statements according to this approach, where you align yourself with the activities of the business?
Is that a concern?
Where the balance sheet should be restructured. Am I up there?
It's
Chairman.
It's more like an idea.
I think I put the example in here in the PAC example. We had other assets and liabilities. If you might find within other assets some items that you would consider to be operating assets and other items that you consider to be financial assets. In the liability section, you might find some liabilities that were financing liabilities and others that were operating liabilities, but within the same number on the face of the balance sheet. And so when you went into the disclosures, you'd either have to sort of try and unpick it, or you'd have to change the order of the financial statements and unbundle the prime financial statements. And I was just suggesting that it actually could drive a change in the presentation of the balance sheet if you wanted to present the notes consistent with the suggested framework.
Okay.
Other than that, with regard to the objectives that we have in slide 17, should the objectives bring forth the idea of providing information around the return to the investors a bit more, should that be more clearly depicted in those objectives was again raised, and I think that's another important point. On a minor note, whether the cost-benefit aspect of producing disclosures should also be included as a part of the objectives. So those were the main feedback that we got from the session at the board.
Okay, let's go on to Holger.
That's going to be me. I think I agreed to do that, didn't I, Holger? So I think our group was, I think it's fair to say, a little mixed in its views. There was some support for doing disclosures by activity, but also some concerns. I think some of the concerns perhaps coming from more from the users, with the view that we might lose context or possibly even information by going down this route. And I think generally the idea was this is a good start, but needs some thought. The group made a preliminary start on some new objectives or new principles, and I think it was a little preliminary. I think we claimed that are complete. But the first of which was that there should be a balanced approach to disclosures which ties in or reflects the business model. It was an agreement that that would be a good thing. There was a view that there should be an ability to link the primary statements and the notes, so the idea of cohesiveness, or as I'm now corrected by Christy, connectedness is what we should call it, so as not to alarm people about previous projects. And also a view that there should be a clear differentiation when we set up all these objectives between MD&A type information and disclosure type information. And I guess part of that is also to get overall that we get the right balance in disclosures. So a little mixed, say some positive, some less positive, so and some feeling that we need to do more work. Did anybody from the group? I didn't summarize properly because we had quite a wide range.
One thing to add is that I think if I go through the agenda paper, I see two thoughts, and the one is how can we more effectively write the standard, the book, and the other thought is how can we make sure that the resulting disclosures are as relevant as possible, and somehow they sometimes get mixed up a bit in the paper, and I think they're very separate things. I think you have to start with what will result in effective disclosure, and then the second is how can we adjust the standards, how the standard is written. And I'm not convinced that just rewriting the standard will solve anything. It has to start with how will it affect the preparers using the standard that the information will be relevant.
Yeah, that kind of came out in our group as well. Violet, that's more as what we said.
I think even in our group, the views were kind of mixed. On the big question of whether or not there is overload of disclosures, some thought no, there is no overload of disclosures, it's fine. And some thought there is an overload of information, or more of that, that the relevant information is kind of hidden in the disclosures. On this approach of activities-based disclosures and this broad disclosures, most thought it was a positive step, positive approach in improving disclosures. But one of the views was that this is a good approach, but probably in a wrong place. This is more useful in MD&A rather than the notes disclosure. So the activities approach is more suitable for an MD&A than the notes. Some thought that the financial statement line item basis of this notes disclosures is more suitable than the activities based. There was one comment on D2 on Appendix B where we have the words consider and sufficient. So one of the views was it's probably good to have some kind of a filter here to get the relevant quantitative information. So that would be more helpful in putting the relevant information there. One of the views was that this approach on the one hand is trying to reduce the overload of information, but it's possible that it will also increase the information or the workload, because you know you need to exercise judgment and there's a lot of work to do. So it's probably it will increase the workload as well as increase the disclosures. There was also kind of a consensus on standardized format using the tabular formats. One specific comment on slide 5 was where we have said storytelling. So there was a comment saying that it's not storytelling, it's reporting. So that needs to be kept in mind when we are doing the disclosures. So that was one specific comment. I think that was the overall views of it.
OK. Okay, anything to add, anybody? Peter?
No, I was the one with the MDNA approach, so I don't think there is any problem with disclosure overload in general, so I think it's a good approach, but within the wrong field.
Okay, and the last group, Cannon Room. Is that Eduardo?
Yes, that's me. So our group was a little less, it was a little more cohesive. I would say more on the concern side than on the benefit side. But I'll start with the benefits that they raised. Benefits was it could help the application of materiality to have more clear objectives linked to the activities of the entities. The objectives developed are in a low level articulated enough to allow that. If they're too broad, it's going to be a problem. And it does help scatter the information to be together, to be linked, and not across a lot of financial statements, not across the financial statements. Now, on the concern side, one of the concerns was similar to what Mark said. I think it was Jacques that raised that, how it links to the primaries. So with the same concern that Mark raised, would have to restructure the primaries because now it is linked, but if you change the notes to this approach, it would be disconnected. So how would you deal with that? In my view, the major risk was that what was raised that I pay most attention was that users would have to relearn to understand financial statements if all the notes were changed like that, because they used to pick information in this particular type of approach. So if this was changed, it would have a huge impact in the way they pick the information. Another negative point is very hard to deal with flexibility, because if you what we heard is that users come up with their own definition of operating and investing and their own kind of cash flows and structures and expenses that go through those activities. And if entities define that, and if each entity would define that in its own way, it would create kind of a hazard between all the different approaches of what is operating, what is investing, what's financing. So any type of adjustment would be even more problematic to do. Another point was raised, it is bad to have a different approach than the FASB. It is a non-convergence issue, so this should be considered as a negative point. Another negative point, is it realistic to do it? I think this is raised already, so is it feasible to do it? And I think that was it. If any of the members have any.
I think I may add a comment which also was made about the practicality of preparing such good notes in major groups. Maybe today the disclosures are maybe a checklist, but it's organized. So we collect the information, it's consolidated, it's reviewed, and then it's published. If you include judgment in the collection of information, if you include judgment in putting the information together in the disclosure, then it could be a significant impact on the process of releasing the accounts. And I think we should really take this into account.
So it just makes your whole process more difficult because you've got this extra layer of judgment.
At different levels.
Jack, do you think there is a disclosure overload problem?
Sorry?
Do you think there's a disclosure overload problem?
We manage it, we have adapted to it. I think it's not the overload by itself. It's more that certain disclosures for certain companies are not really relevant. It's not the workload itself. It's more the relevancy of certain disclosures.
So you don't think this approach would help you identify what is less relevant?
And I think maybe it has also been addressed. And another point, I think a number of those issues should be reviewed within the management report. Disclosure should not replace the management report. So.
I was going to add that one of the benefits we saw of the approach here was that you're more likely to get users to change. If you take if you don't take it holistically, then there may likely be less appetite to want to change the structure of their notes. So doing it at a big bang, if you want the outcome to have a big project, doing this approach is an advantage to get that change. I don't know that an advantage is cost savings, because for many of us, aggregating that disclosure to have the discussion internally about whether it's material, we've already gone through the cost exercise to do what's needed to make that materiality call. So I think to suggest there's an advantage of cost savings may not be the true complete story. I think the other third thing is that you need to be careful about when you're describing advantages and disadvantages, because it depends on the perspective you're taking as to who wins and who loses in the approach that's going forward. So those are the three additional pieces.
Okay, Horatio. Thank you. I have a concern regarding the approach too, as he pointed out. Several disadvantages are critical for preparers. I'd like to add one point regarding roll-forward information. And under the approach 2, you require roll-forward information for all material operating assets. But under current disclosure requirement, roll-forward information is limited to just important information. For example, you don't require roll-forward of inventories. So if you require all information of roll forward, it will require information of direct cash flow. It's a significant burden. Did others interpret it that way?
That was the point that I was trying to make earlier, that you need the filter at a higher level than the D2 paragraph, where you're, before you determine which accounts you're going to provide roll forward information, you have to make an assessment on which ones are really the important ones from an operating perspective, and where are the users going to get meaning from the information. I do have a little bit of a concern that it's a backdoor direct cash flow project, or could end up with something like that.
So what's the difference between this approach with a filter and a checklist?
I think the filter, you have an ability to make judgments on which items are the most important from a operating perspective.
But isn't that already in there? Disclose information enables users to understand, consider disclosure. Isn't that already there, in the sense we're saying provide information that is relevant to investors and don't provide it if you don't think it's relevant? So if you don't think the roll forward of inventory is relevant, then leave it out.
But that's already after it says, you know, you have to disclose information about operating activity. If you put the filter ahead of that to determine which accounts are important to provide roll forward information.
The filter would say don't apply this to inventories.
Right. You know, if your inventory is consistent period to period, why is roll forward information important? If your receivables are essentially settled in, you know, 30 days, is roll forward information really meaningful to the investors? So, you know, those types of questions and filtering at a higher level before you make considerations about items that you're going to disclose within a roll forward.
Right. Well,
just wanted to caution that when you think about the cost of it, and I would summarize, as a preparer, we have a terrible product, but by God, we have a great process of producing that terrible product. and so when you think about the when you think about the cost, and thinking of it like a preparer wouldn't speak, if you accept the cost of capital and decreasing cost of capital from going to this approach from a strong proponent of, I think those cost savings economically dwarf what companies may spend in trying to change their processes to actually get a pretty good product. So,
how do you think this would reduce your cost of capital?
I think it would be more transparent. I think we'd get more information of what Microsoft's about. So I think Malcolm said about 40% of his footnotes, combination of financial instruments, pensions, and share-based payments. Just under, a tick under 50% of Microsoft's financial statements are on financial instruments. If you think of Microsoft as a bank, then great. I don't think Microsoft's a bank, and I think our future value is not in banking.
So I'm going to ask our users, if Microsoft took out all of their financial instrument disclosures, would you pay more for their stock?
But we have to replace it with something that talks about our intellectual capital and human capital. How about we make that switch? Okay. Is we take all the pages out on financial instruments and replace it with robust disclosures on human capital and intellectual, honest discussion of our intellectual capital, human capital, and our strategy. Would you see a beneficial cost of capital?
I mean, that's, you're describing an integrated report now.
Well, I'm just giving an example. Come on. If you want crap, we'll give you crap. Hey, we've got great processes to give you crap. We'll keep doing it. I don't care.
The one doesn't rule out the other.
Okay, Mitch next.
My concerns would be that, while this is very elegant and obviously has some clear practical implications, it does risk some inconsistency across companies. I worry that some information will just get dropped out inconsistently. It also introduces uncertainty sort of through what's the other side of something like this. And then also, you know, perhaps a bit of a Cassandra, but I mean, it's also, you know, it's a lot of opportunity cost from intellectual capital is going to be thrown at something like this that could be otherwise spent on maybe some other items that for discussion, including certain items in the cash flow statement, which I'd love to talk about at some point. But I'm perhaps less favorable as a user. In terms of overload of information, I mean, look, I think at the end of the day, there's a natural tension between users and the practitioners on this, I suppose, isn't it? I mean, we're going to want everything. You're going to want to do less. So we had the discussions. Yeah, well, what's great for us is maybe not so good for you, but what's good for you is maybe not so great for us. And also, yeah, there's a ton of information out there, but some of it's relevant to some pockets of the investment world, and some of it's relevant, and not relevant to others, and vice versa. So
you don't feel overloaded with information?
No, I just go pick and choose what I want. Sorry, but I mean, that's, I just go through the notes, go through the MD&A, search out what I need, drop it into my model, but I want it to be there consistently where I know it's going to be, where I expect it to be. So just consistency, standardization, information. I may not be most attractive to hear from the practitioner side. But.
Okay, well, let's go to Peter and Martin, and then Malcolm can respond. Peter?
I actually want to add to Mitch's presentation that if you look at all the material relating to equity analysis that comes out from all the banks and look at how much of that relates at all to accounting, it's almost nothing. But when it does, it's normally when some analyst or some analysts have digged through the footnotes in a certain extent, maybe IAS 39 or pensions or some other difficult area, dependent normally on the swings in the interest rate. If we don't get this information, it becomes so much more difficult to do this analysis using the footnote. But again, not normally we dig into the footnote that much, but when we do, we like to have the material in a certain way, and I think we have that now, and that is actually something that makes it easier to work with than if I need to, in some company, have it on page early and some late and so on. So I think consistency, I agree, it's extremely important.
I do think there are challenges with disclosures, and it's in some cases there. I think we all agree that the significant accounting policies paragraphs are cluttered with overload, and it's not that we don't want to know significant accounting policies, it's just that we don't want summaries of accounting policies. So is there overload? There is clear overload in some areas, and there will be other areas where there's overload. But the problem is not that the problem for investors is not that there is overload. The problem is that, because that would imply we only want reduction of the notes, and I think many investors would agree that we want higher relevance, higher information content in the notes. And for the significant accounting policies, that would result in a lot less loads usually.
But the start point for me at least is higher relevance, more useful information in disclosures.
Can you give me an example of something you're missing at the moment?
Can you ask that question? You ask question?
We had a discussion yesterday on the agenda, future agenda. So we had like 12 things that jumped to mind on group structure, on information about the proportional share of operating profit, proportional share in revenue. We thought about now. Please help us. We're making a long list now of
it's not Christmas.
But it's not so finishes it. So yes.
He's not on their clothes.
There is. And forward-looking information, for example. I mean, that's
Okay. Not all of us agree on that.
Not at all of us.
So I like to, when I was for many years producing financial statements, I like to think I was producing those financial statements of a good quality for my investors, for my stakeholders, my customers, my providers of capital. And when I think back about comments coming in from people up to the footnotes, the only people that ended up commenting on the footnotes were the regulators. So, is it really my be-all and end-all to, as a preparer of financial statements, to prepare all of this information just for the purpose of the regulators and not for my providers of capital and my stakeholders and internal management? So, to be honest, the footnotes end up so much being pure compliance exercise. You tell us what we have to do. The regulators are the only people with the same checklist, and my auditors going through those checklists, but that's not really the purpose of me producing financial statements, to satisfy regulators.
What would be the first note you'd be in?
Well, I very much, Bob mentioned it, is not being in the right context for the company where it's relevant. Many of this stuff is relevant, but for us as operating companies, not financial companies, to have so much devoted to arcane disclosures on financial instruments, on share-based compensation, on pensions. It goes back to the point you raised, that the balance is just wrong. Now, I'm not going to, lo and behold, I'm not telling you guys to go out and all of a sudden start introducing whole loads of extra disclosures on this. But the balance is just not right.
So you're not querying IFRS 7, just its application to non-financial companies. So the disclosure should be proportionate to the importance within the organisation.
And sometimes in some years, to be honest, I don't want to bob you. You know your company better than me, but I'm sure in your balance sheet you do actually have quite a lot of, I understand, quite a lot of liquid assets. So
it might be relevant somewhere.
It's relevant. We have over $100 billion in assets. And what's relevant is how we're investing it, which is pretty conservative. What's relevant is the tax implications and our liquidity in the U.S. What's less relevant is what we call footnote 3, 4, and 5, which are ones the investments at fair value, next one's derivatives, the next one is the level with a fair value.
And then, the difference between the fair value and book value of your cash holdings?
No.
Why do you disclose it?
Because
surely the information is not material.
If you want to fight with the regulators and the auditors, have at it. You got to think of our environment. I'm not proud of the fact, but I don't feel that the way the system works, that I have that possibility. And there's a difference between the ISB and the FASB on netting and offsetting.
Well, the infamous FASB footnote that we have to do took up another additional page, one whole additional page.
Okay, we've got a number of others, and I'm missing out. Jack, Peter, Mitch, Peter, then Jack, then Frank.
I think Mitch.
Mitch was first.
Yeah, but he's giving the list of all.
Thanks. a couple things. Up of what Malcolm has just said. Then why not a more focused approach on what's wrong? I mean, if it ain't. Maybe one of the wheels is off, but the whole thing ain't broken. Why attack? Why go for this sort of big bad approach? I mean, there's from a consensus of two, there's a problem with one component of the nursing services. There's too much information. Then take a more focused approach of getting rid of the quote useless information or the overzealous information. Just anecdotally, my suspicion is that the regulatory requirements for that are predicated on events that have happened in the past, and as always, there's an over response to events that have happened in the past, and so the regulatory requirements overcompensate or respond to what wasn't required in the past because there's been some event in that specific area. I'm just trying to think in the late 90s, early 2000s, if there were some problems with disclosures of financial instruments that created a degradation of firm value. So now they're putting the suspenders on. What do you call them, braces? And then the other thing was, can I add, give off my list of what changes would be, because I think a lot of this is good. I'm a credit guy, and a lot of this stuff is always so equity focused. So I would spend a lot of time, things I would do on the cash flow statement. I would like to see consistent approach to the cash flow statement. I want to see cash interest in the cash from operations, not either in the cash from operations or in the cash from financing. Mm-hmm. Cash interest every quarter, cash taxes every quarter, segment profitability is good, definite capital structure would be nice. And also more information on liquidity. So, for example, in the text you have sort of what liquidity facilities are, but it would be nice to have more of a sort of table or breakout. These are liquidity facilities. This is what's drawn or encumbered, and this is what's available on a quarterly basis. That's my list. So, Merry Christmas.
I just want to comment on Malcolm's comment, and I think you actually are using the wrong indicator to indicate the analyst's interest in your footnotes. I mean, when we meet the management, the CFO and the CEO of a company in the phone after a quarter report, the obvious question is not how have you calculated the pension liability, but of course, how is the business doing? What are the customers doing? What is your pricing policy? Does the volume goes up or down? You haven't disclosed that. So I think just because you don't meet the questions, it doesn't mean that we are actually interested. But again, it drowns in all the other aspects being an equity analyst. So I don't think you should use that as an indicator at all.
Sure.
And maybe they are good, so we don't need to put any questions to you. They are very clear and precise.
Oh, come on.
That's too nice. That's too nice.
He doesn't believe in Santa Claus. it was similar comment on Malcolm. Statement. It's not because you don't have questions on the notes that the analyst don't use it. I mean, basically, I use it to check some facts, or there's something I don't understand. So if I go to the notes and then I understand, fine. I mean, and you will never get any question. If I found something strange, I try to cross-check with all the notes, and then I got some information, some meaning things. And if I feel that you have just improved your earnings with a nice presentation, this is not exactly the thing I will tell you directly, to be honest. So one of the important role of the footnotes is to have an assessment of the quality of the earnings, whatever you want. But it's extremely important, and I think it is among the core role of an analyst. Earnings is... something difficult to define, but I think the quality of earnings is very important for assessing your investment strategy. So I use it, and I believe that many others are in fact using it. Not all, but they are using it, and they are important.
I think you're talking about MD&A, not about the footnotes.
No, no, I
believe it, but I would say it just doesn't seem like an optimum way to do it. Maybe it's because we as preparers are just not being forthright in describing the quality of our earnings.
Yeah.
But it just seems like a backwards way of doing things. But maybe it is what it is.
I'm actually using footnotes not in the MD&A in the accounts and it's to check some facts when I have questions. And I do it very often, to be honest. And it is an important part of my work, I believe. It doesn't mean that I really wrote a report on this footnote. Well, never. But I have checked something. The information was there. It's fine. I understand. Okay, I've got it. But you will not have feedback because the footnote on page 23 is fantastic.
Please give it to him. Don't feel relevant.
No, it's fine. The situation is correct. I've understood what's going on, and it's not a problem. That's most of the case what I've got.
Frank, you had the card up earlier.
You asked about which disclosures to remove. I'd remove note one, the county policies. I would require entity-specific judgment items, significant estimates. That's what I'd focus on. The rest is summary of accounting.
So only those accounting policies where you're making choices where you have judgments. Yeah, that's what I voted for as well.
As a user, I wouldn't have it.
I'd also remove the offsetting disclosure, similar to Bob. If the two boards can't work out the same balance sheet presentation, let's not try and link it by giving a note disclosure to bring the two together. And I think, Bob, if you have level 3 derivatives, you should disclose them because I want to see them.
We don't have any.
Then you're fine.
But we'll give them to you when we have them.
Sandra, last word on this.
One of the things that came to light as people were talking about is the fact that sometimes disclosures from an industry perspective are important, and the boards have made an effort to move away from any industry-specific guidelines. But if you look at, you know, the oil and gas industry, there are incremental disclosures that are very important to understanding our industry. We're not going to put those requirements on other industries. If you look at financial institutions, there are disclosures that are relevant from their perspective that perhaps don't need to be in the financial statements of manufacturing companies. And I think that the goal to move away from industry-specific guidance may have caused some of the overload.
Okay. Holger or team, any observations?
Maybe one observation from my side in context of what we have heard about the scope and the boundaries of information. I think it needs to be clarified in the way that in this project we do not really consider whether it should be part of financial statements or it should be part of MD&A. So I was very surprised with this kind of forward-looking information. I think we will not clarify whether forward-looking information to what extent this will be part of the notes. It's more this in a kind of conceptual framework, a discussion whether it is part of financial statements, the information, or whether this more forward-looking information should be part of MD&A. I think to clarify, for us, it was the objective of this session to really to think about how to improve the objectives. And of course, if you have an objective to understand financing activities, you could also consider that you would also like to see some forward-looking information to understand financing activities. But this would be a kind of separate discussion we would have, because this would be more about the boundaries and scope of information. But this is not really what we would address in this project, but I think I have heard and it will be also part of agenda consultation to question what is actually part of MD&A and part of the notes.
Okay, we'll no doubt have plenty of opportunity to discuss this further. The next stage is a discussion paper.
We're eager to move in this direction, and hopefully there will be a discussion paper at the end of this year.
Okay, so maybe next year back on the agenda for this meeting. Right, let's have a short break, shall we? Resume again at 1:45.